Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. I have to say, the morning has gone off wonderfully. I came in to iHeart, and my favorite person was here. Good morning, Lizzie.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you and thank Tony for breakfast, because let me tell you what, they made me some homemade blueberry muffins and homemade spicy candied bacon, and topped it off with butter and some orange juice. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And it was, we brought it in last week for the guys and with Gary. And they enjoyed it, but I saved some for you this week, and he made it fresh yesterday. So we're just glad to have you back. So that's
good. Thank you.
It's been a great week for gardening. The temperatures have been good. It's been, you know, a little bit chilly in the morning, and then later in the afternoon, it's been wonderful Florida, come to Florida weather. And the garden has been great. I want to say a big thank you to Gary Bachman. He said hello.
Oh, yes, and thank you for the muscadine. Oh, I'm so, my favorite grape in the whole world. Favorite, and the seeds. Oh, my gosh, thank you. I love that.
Yes, and so he always brings treats, and so I'm just thrilled with when he comes. And he was very gracious to come and do a consultation for me. So I love that. So it was excellent. So we had a lot of fun. This week, also, I'd like to say good morning to my classes yesterday. I taught a course on a landscape design for the Florida Federation of Garden Clubs. And we had people from all over the United States and on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And it was really fascinating. So I had a great time and enjoyed teaching the class. So I just want to give a good morning shout out to everyone who participated in the course.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Some other news, too, Peterson's Nursery. They're going to have a vegetable gardening class at 9:30 this morning. So if you want to run over there and learn about how to grow vegetables, this is February. We can start growing tomatoes and all kinds of beans and cantaloupe and cucumbers and peppers and pumpkins. Got to get your pumpkins in the ground.
They are going in this week.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
That's good because, you know, you had a little fear of pumpkins.
Third time will be the charm.
That's it. It's going to be squash and watermelon. You got to get those in the ground. And it's warm enough. We have some excellent guests today coming on. We have the chocolate botanist. And I'm very excited to talk to Derek Haynes. And he's going to be on. And then also Pam Knox from the University of Georgia. And I'm not supposed to say go Bulldogs because I'm a Gator.
Did you just throw up in your mouth whenever you did that?
But Pam is wonderful, and I'm very excited to have her on. And she's got some great information for us on weather. She is a climatologist. And I'm going to be very fascinated to talk to her. She's got some good news for us. And so then we're also going to be talking about chocolate plants today. You know, if you love chocolate. Mm-hmm. And we do. May want to have some chocolate plants for Valentine's Day. So we're going to be talking about that. Also, too, getting back to Peterson's Nursery, I didn't say the big news. The big news is petersonsnursery.com. Roses are going to be ready in 2 weeks. And Howie said to let you know.
Okay.
And so roses are going to be ready in 2 weeks, but you have to sign up for them and register on their website. They have such a demand, and that they're telling everybody that if you want roses, because they go very quickly, and he does something like 1,500 roses.
Oh, I believe it, because I've seen his stack of roses before, and that's why I'm like, this year, we're going to redo our garden bed. I mean, okay, it's a small bed, but whatever, we're going to redo it with his roses.
That'll be great. So, but you do have to register online. So go to petersonsnursery.com, and I even think they have a coupon for butterfly garden plants. So you can go on their website and get that coupon. So those of you in the Lakeland area, you want to run over there and take that. So this month, vegetables should be going in. You know, the groundhog didn't see a shadow. So we have spring going to be coming very early, and I think it's here. already think it's summertime here. And what can you be planting right now besides the vegetables? You could be planting, again, like I said, warm season summer vegetables, beans, cantaloupe, corn, cucumbers, eggplant, luffa, and then peppers and pumpkins and more squash, tomatoes, and watermelon. But you can also be planting the herbs, too, as well. And, you know, have a little bit of edible landscaping in your garden. It just adds so much flavor to your landscape. But also, too, the butterflies are attracted to herbs as well. Anise and basil and borage, chives. I love chives. I'm an onion girl.
Yes.
And dill and fennel. Dill and fennel attract the monarch butterflies and the swallowtails. So they're wonderful. Lemon balm, mint, oregano, parsley, rosemary, and sage, sweet marjoram, tarragon, and thyme. And so we're going to have a really fun show today. We have Derek Haynes coming on. He is the chocolate botanist from North Carolina. And I'm looking forward to talking with him. He's just an exciting guy. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I started off saying that Derek Haynes was going to be here, the chocolate botanist, but it's actually a really exciting interview with Pam Knox. She is the director of the UGA, University of Georgia, Weather Network, a network of 86 stations around the state of Georgia, which have been recording weather and climate since 1991. She's also the agricultural climatologist for the University of Georgia. And she has an exciting blog called On the Case, and I'm so thrilled to have her here. Good morning, Pam. How are you?
Good morning. I am fine. We are up to 90 stations now.
Isn't that great? That's wonderful. And so are they just in each county, or do you have multiple stations in the south of Georgia, north of Georgia?
No, they're pretty evenly scattered across the state. You know, Georgia has 159 counties, so we don't have that many yet.
Okay, but I think you'll get them.
We have them scattered out, especially through the agricultural areas. We don't have too many in the middle of cities because that's not what our mission is.
Sure. So, Pam, tell us about your work at the Weather Network. Do you, as a climatologist, how do you combine weather with agriculture?
Well, you know, I mean, weather is what's happening today. Climate is sort of like what you expect over the long time period. So you really need both components. The weather information is useful for farmers when they're planning what they're going to work on. For example, you know, most planting occurs, depending on the crop, when the temperatures of the soil get to about 55 to 60 here in Georgia. And so people watch the soil temperatures very closely to see if it's the right time to plant in the spring. So they're really looking at that. Soil moisture is important because they need to know whether or not to irrigate. So they're looking at that. And, of course, you know, all the weather information, temperatures, the wind direction and wind speed are important for determining things like when you're going to spray your chemicals because you don't want them to drift into your neighbor's farm. And so all of that information is useful. But the climate information is also useful when you're planting because you want to know what's the average date of the last frost because you don't want to plant too early and have your plants be nipped by frost. And so we really provide both of that information to the farmers.
Excellent. And so do you coordinate with all of the universities in the South and Mississippi and Florida and, you know, Alabama? Do you regularly check with them on what's going on in their state?
Well, we have the National Weather Service to provide national weather. Each of the states has their own network or networks. Florida has one, for example. It's called FAWN, F-A-W-N.
Yes.
And here in Georgia, we've got one. Alabama's got three different ones. South Carolina does not have any, but I understand that Clemson is in the process of setting up an agricultural network there. So every state is a little bit different.
Okay. It's February, and in the South, usually means spring is around the corner. But can we still get more freezing weather? Because I wanted to talk about some of the terms for winter. And, you know, it will help if we're going to have freezing weather.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, in Florida, you're a little warmer than we are here in Georgia, so your frost dates will change, will be a little bit different than ours. But we're still really in Georgia here about a month from the average last frost date, depending on whether you're in South Georgia or in North Georgia. South Georgia, the last frost date on average, probably late February. If you're in North Georgia, it can be a lot later than that, especially in the mountains where you've got the elevation to worry about, too.
Mm-hmm. Ours is March 15th, and so we can get a frost. But, you know, the temperatures, you know, it's 80 degrees one day and then 50 the next day and going down into the, you know, 30s. And so it's kind of schizophrenic, depending on.
Well, right now we're in this warm pattern, but that's going to change. I think we're going to go back into a colder pattern for most of the rest of February. And so I don't expect that we're going to see these warm conditions continue. Again, it depends on where you are, because Florida is a pretty big state, and so
sure.
is Georgia.
Sure. Yeah, those of our listeners in Key West are kind of tilting their head and going, really? And
right.
so that usually, the weather and chill and how much rain we get is usually dependent on the currents, like when we have an El Nino and a La Nina year. How do they differ in their impact on agriculture and even home gardening?
Sure. Well, I don't know how many of your listeners know what El Nino and La Nina are, so let me just talk a little bit about that. There's a global circulation called El Nino Southern Oscillation that occurs. We first really noticed it, or scientists noticed it, maybe about 100 years ago with warmer than usual water in the eastern Pacific Ocean off the coast of Peru and Ecuador. And that warm weather was associated with a loss of fish habitat and things like that, because the water was so warm that there was no nutrients for the fish. And it turned out that it affected the harvest of potatoes in Peru, which is one of their main crops. And surprisingly, even though it seems like it's pretty far away, it does affect the weather here in the southeast. And when we have an El Nino winter like we have right now, the jet stream, the southern branch of the jet stream, comes right over us, drops a lot of rain, we have a lot of cloud cover. Temperatures tend to be cooler, mostly because we have all that cloud cover, so the sun is not really shining very bright.
Right.
When we're in the opposite phase, La Nina, the water off the coast of Peru and Ecuador are colder than usual, and that forces the jet stream to the north, so we are really left high and dry. And so in La Nina winters, we're usually warmer and sunnier than usual, and we have less rain. So right now we're in a strong El Nino. It's supposed to go away in the next few months. And then we'll see what happens after that. But it's definitely winter is the strongest signal of El Nino or La Nina.
Wow, that's great. I that's a great explanation. So you recently guest posted on one of the great garden blogs with Extension and University professors called gardenprofessors.com, and you discussed wind chill and the effects on plants. And I had that question back at the beginning or the end of January, so I wanted to have you on. I really have never understood the phrase, and I've even had discussions with it with Tom McCubbin, our host emeritus. What exactly is wind chill?
Well, essentially what wind chill is the wind mechanically stripping heat away from some sort of body that's putting out heat. So since plants are usually at air temperature, they don't put out their own heat. They're not really affected by wind chill, but people certainly are. So if you're out in cold weather, especially if the wind is blowing, that wind pulls the heat away from you and causes you to feel colder than you would if there were no wind.
Okay, so wind chill, that's a myth that it affects plants. So when we're actually covering our plants with frost blankets, it has nothing to do with the wind.
Well, I mean, the wind certainly can have other effects, right, because it's still pulling moisture away. And so it can be drying out the plants.
Okay.
And you know, it certainly causes faster changes in temperature. So in that respect, plants would be more vulnerable. But the wind itself, the plants don't put out any heat. You know, they don't have internal combustion engines, or they don't have the digestion system that we do. So they're not really putting out any heat that could be stripped away. But certainly there's other things that could be affected by it.
Thank you. So what constitutes a microclimate? We talk about microclimates across the country and in gardening especially. And so what constitutes a microclimate?
Well, you know, a climate is just a description of what the average temperature and moisture conditions are at a particular location. And I think most gardeners are pretty familiar with the idea that what happens on the north side of your house is different than what happens on the south side of your house because of differences in exposure to sunlight, exposure to wind, maybe different kinds of soil, and so on. So the microclimate describes what's going on at each individual location, and it can change quite a bit over a short period, just depending over a short distance, just depending on, you know, what the number of trees are to block the wind, whether or not there's a building there, what the sunlight is like, or if there's shade. So all those things can contribute to quite a bit of difference in climate, even across a fairly small landscape.
And so in your blog post, you had a really great way for gardeners to find out if they have a microclimate, and what was your suggestion?
Well, I think, you can probably, one of the easiest ways is to go and walk around. If you have one of these little handheld thermometers that they use for HVAC that are pretty fast responding, you can go and measure the temperature around your property and see how much it varies over even short distances. And that will tell you, I think most gardeners would also know that, different parts of the land might have different soils, so some are going to drain more quickly than others. If you've got a rain garden where the rain all courses into, then that's going to be wetter. It's going to have different requirements for watering than an area that's an upland or sandy kind of soil.
And so would you suggest that people, plant crops in their property and in their gardens based on the microclimates?
Yeah, I think within reason that you'd want to try to match the microclimate to whatever it is you're trying to grow, whether it's a crop or some sort of ornamental plant. And so that is something that you would want to keep into account. And my guess is that if you spend any time out in your yard or your garden, you're going to kind of know where the places are that are most susceptible to frost or the most warm conditions, the first places that warm up in the spring.
Excellent. And so on your website and your blog on the case, you gave some great links for looking at weather patterns and the winds. And tell us a little bit about on the case and what people will find out when they subscribe to your blog, which is free.
Sure. I've been doing the blog since 2014, and so there's a lot of information there. Some of it's getting older now, and I try to update that. It has a lot of information about different sources of weather and climate data. It's got stories I've read in the news lately about how the climate is affecting agriculture, and it also has summaries of recent climate occurrences, like the last monthly climate values that were measured. And so all of this information is available on the blog. I usually try to put out things several times a week. Just a variety of information, but I think probably of the most use is the things like, where do you get information about wind? Where do you get information about temperatures and frost dates at your location? Some of those things would be very useful for gardeners.
Well, Pam, thank you so much. I have enjoyed reading your blog and learning all this information, and you have some great resources in it for anyone who grows a large crop of vegetables in their garden. No, even if you're in Florida versus Georgia, but anywhere, I think your blog provides a lot of great information. Thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you. It's been great. I have to tell you, I am also an onion person, so I look forward to hearing the rest of your talk.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Pam. Take care, hon. All right. That's
all right,
Pam
bye-bye.
Knox. She is the director of the, let's see, I've got the information right here.
You're having a problem with the University of Georgia, aren't you?
Yeah.
You stumbled over that a couple of times.
I did. It's just so against the grain of my, go Gators. And so, but she is wonderful and her information is easy to understand and she gives great links. And so I thought our listeners in North Florida would mm-hmm. be interested in her information, but also she explains weather and how it affects our gardens and landscapes. So thank you very much, Pam.
Yes.
You're going to be back with more Better Lawns and Gardens. This is a time to call 1-888-455-2967. You can text me at 23680. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a gardening question, I would love to talk with you. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. I know the text line is working, and so that's always good.
And the phone lines are working too.
There you go. So I know it's early in the morning, and I know you're just waking up with your morning beverage, but I know you have a gardening question. So give us a call, 1-888-455-2967. Let's go to Eileen in Polk City. Good morning, Eileen. How are you?
Good morning. I have a bird question.
Oh, super. Okay, great.
I have crows and these brown-looking crow-like. Do they ever go away? Please tell me.
No, they
don't. Go away?
Why do they bother you? What are they doing? Because they're pretty smart birds.
They're bird feeders.
Yeah, they're very smart. They know where the food is, yes. And so, they're very, it's just, they know where to get the food. So do they take it all or do they dump it out or what do they do with it?
They take it all.
Yep.
And then they dump it out. And then there's like 30 of them on the ground.
So one goes over to the buffet feeder and dumps it out and says, come on, guys.
Yeah, and I'm out here reading my Bible, and it's like, okay, Lord, hold on a minute. And I have to get up.
She goes after God's little creatures. And then she comes back and continues to read the Bible. Good job, Eileen.
Yeah, that's my morning routine.
You know, anything you do to scare them off is going to scare off the other birds, too. So, have they always been there, or do they just show up recently?
No, they just have known. They have just shown up.
Okay, so they're pretty aware of what's going on. I would say if you could just handle it, I would put some pie tins around it, so kind of scare them off. You know, even some wind chimes or just stop putting bird food in it for about a week, and see if they decide to go elsewhere.
Oh, I don't think they'll do that because I was at a bird seed for a week.
And they were there knocking on the door. Your bird feeder's empty. Bird feeder's empty.
They came back. Lord.
Well, let me know what you do, Eileen.
Yes.
She's always got bird problems. It's either roosters or crows or too funny. Oh, too funny.
You know what? I miss my roosters.
No.
What? I'm pulling the tape. I'm pulling the tape. I cannot believe she just said that.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
I talked to George, the one that has some of the roosters.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what did you do with them all? He said, well, somebody wanted to buy them. I said, well, why don't you get one back? He said, maybe.
Oh, okay. Well, let me know because I do miss them in the background talking with you. So I do appreciate it. And, well, you're always in our thoughts and prayers. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye, hon. And that's Eileen from Polk City, the former rooster lady who didn't own any roosters.
Right.
So, yeah. I really am fascinated by blackbirds because they're so smart. They actually, some of them can mimic human talk.
Yeah, that I can't stand them. I can't. I think that they are like sky rats, like pigeons. I don't like them because they can mimic people and they can mimic other birds, and that angers me. you're individual. Your name isn't Mockingbird. You need to go get your own little tweet or whatever and do your own thing.
There you go. All right. So let me give you. So it's coming up on Valentine's Day. And there are plants that either smell like chocolate or taste like chocolate.
Mm.
And we're not going to mention the one villain because you have. Do you still have any chocolate mint?
I would say 100% I still have chocolate mint. Yes, ma'am.
And it's a great ground cover, really, for someone who is. And just walking through it is just amazing. But if you love chocolate, you can have a plant inside or in your landscape that smells like chocolate, and you can actually use them for garnishes, some of them that you can put on dinners. So the one that's really, really common is Chocolate Cosmos, and Chocolate Cosmos is gorgeous. It is a deep burgundy kind of mahogany color. When Cosmos comes in all kinds of colors, pink and white and blues and or little light lavenders and yellows. And but the chocolate is very fall looking, very rich looking. And it's they look and they smell like chocolate goodness. And so chocolate goodness is amazing. So the blooms come all summer long. You need full sun. They have tall stems, so you can put them in. They got delicate stems, but you can use them in floral displays. And they grow in zones 7 to 10. But above Florida, they're usually grown as an annual. So they'll go back down to the ground and reseed. So I love chocolate cosmos. It's beautiful. The next one is chocolate flower, and that's the name of it. It's a Berlandiera Lyrata. And it is another small daisy-shaped yellow blossoms, but has cocoa-scented blooms. And that is wonderful. Ooh. It grows in zone 7 to 9 and gets to be about 8 inches tall, full sun. They like moisture, though. So this would be good near a shoreline area, near a lakefront, a pond, or in really organic, wet soils, low-lying areas. That'll be wonderful. And then there's the chocolate vine, and it's called an Akiba quinata. And this one is very fragrant, has a chocolate aroma, very easy care. It has either purple or white chocolate-scented flowers that bloom in late spring. And so it's the foliage is shaped like a hand, and it looks very tropical. It climbs to 30 feet in full sun or part shade, and again, needs moist, well-drained soils, mesic soils. So if you have earthworms, you can have these in zones 5 to 9. Okay, so those of you further north in Virginia and North Carolina, Maryland, and even in Pennsylvania on further New York, you can grow the chocolate vine. Then there's the rose. The one rose that I think fits this really well is the hot cocoa rose. And it is not chocolate scented, but it just looks like cocoa. The color is a very burgundy red with brown undertones, and it gives off a moderate fragrance, needs full sun and organic soils. It grows to a foot tall, and you can grow it in zone 7 to 9. So that's just a few. We've got a few more. We're going to carry on through the rest of the program. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a gardening question, this is the time to do it. 1-888-455-2967. Lizzie's waiting. And you can also text me at 23680. So let's go to Mark from Winter Garden. It's a text message. It says, good Saturday morning. A previous lawn company would spray a blue liquid to kill areas of heavy weed infestation that wouldn't kill the St. Augustine. Do you know what that is? And thank you so much. Mark, if you will send me an email, you can do it at betterlawns.com, and I will get you that information. There's several out there, so I'm just going to give you several of them, and I don't want to do it right now over the air. So email me at betterlawns.com, and I will get that information to you. I don't know if you will be able to get it through homeowners, but I'll check it out. Thank you so much. 1-888-455-2967. If you're in the garden area, we'd love to hear from you. There is also, let me give you some more chocolate plants that are wonderful for Florida. There is the dark chocolate coleuses. And dark chocolate coleus, the leaves are a rich dark purple with slight brown undertones. And it is sun or shade and mesic soils, moist soils, and it grows to 30 inches, and it is an annual anywhere but Florida. Florida, it will grow year-round and does very well. There's another coleus called chocolate mint, and it bears rich purple-red foliage that's edged in lime green.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yes.
I love that.
It's wonderful. And so if you're in up north, you can also grow this coleus chocolate mint as a house plant. And it needs bright light, shade, and moist. Well, bright light inside the house. Outside shade will do very well. And it likes organic soils. And then we have the sweet hot chocolate daylily. Daylilies are really easy to grow. They're wonderful for Florida, and I just think that they should be in every garden. So this daylily, sweet hot chocolate daylily, has a unique mahogany purple flower in the summertime, but you can eat daylilies. They are edible.
Oh.
And so they don't taste like cocoa, though. This one doesn't taste like cocoa. But the sweet hot chocolate daylily needs sun, organic soils, grows 24 inches tall, and in zones 3 to 10. Now, there's another daylily called chocolate candy, which also has the chocolate coloring and is also edible. You can eat the flower, and it's a real pretty in the garden. There is a chocolate sunflower, and Lizzie, you were talking about that. Okay,
yes.
So tell us why you like it.
It's just the color is dark. It's gorgeous. You don't expect to see a sunflower that color. I absolutely love them. I've grown them in the past until the bears came through and ate the tops off. And then, well, you know.
You just got to share and share alike.
I guess there. So. But I was okay with that because he needed to be fed. So,
there you
but yes,
go.
They're gorgeous. So you really should get them and plant them.
Right now is a good time to put them. And you know what? I would stagger. So if you love growing sunflowers, stagger the planting so that every 2 weeks you plant a new row. Mm-hmm. And then that way throughout, you can plant them all the way through fall and have sunflowers all summer long.
What I did was with my last batch that I did is that I looked to where the sun is. And so I planted my first row as a back row so that way they would grow taller and not block the sun on the next couple of rows.
Oh,
that
that's
I did.
Good.
So,
good
yeah,
for you.
So I planted, look at your sun and see, or put a stick in the ground around noon and see what shadows. And then that's what I did is I decided that's where I'm going to plant my first row. So.
Look at you. That's wonderful. I love that. Okay, so chocolate sunflower has big flower heads surrounded by golden brown petals that look especially stunning if you plant them with regular sunflowers. Mm-hmm. So it gets to be 4 feet tall and 24 inches wide, needs full sun, well-drained soils, and you can grow these anywhere in the country. They're just,
yes.
They're just wonderful in the summertime. So then also we have, let's see, 1-888-455-2967 if you want to give us a call.
Mm-hmm.
And a text message 23680. So then there is a viola. Pansies are out. People are planting pansies. You know, we usually can plant them from November through, but it's been so warm that they're just not going to last a long time. But I'm starting to see the pansies, you know, pop up in gardens. And so calibrachoas can be grown here in Florida. They're a perfect complement to the chocolate cosmos I was talking about, but they're called color burst chocolate calibrachoas. They look like petunias. They're a smaller variety. They have burgundy blooms that are blushed with brown. They are an annual, and they make a great, excellent spiller in your container gardens or as a hanging basket. So it's called Color Burst Chocolate. They take sun or part shade. They grow 10 inches tall and 10 inches wide. So they hang down very, very nicely for the for your gardens and your hanging baskets. And then let's see which other ones. The purple four-leaf clover is a quick-growing ground cover. Purple four-leaf clover bears rich chocolate purple foliage edged in green. And most of the leaves actually do have four leaflets instead of the traditional three, so you can always feel lucky. It's called Trifolium repens atropurpureum. Atropurpureum. They take sun or part shade. They grow in zones 7 four to nine, zones 4 to 9, and they do very well. I love that as a ground cover. And clover is one of those plants that you can plant with dogs.
Yes.
And it doesn't hurt them. So the dogs can, it makes a great ground cover for a dog cage or a kennel area. And so one of the cannas is called Intrigue. And when you need a plant that's going to provide that wow factor, Intrigue Canna is it. So it's tall, upright stems, and large leaves are a delightful shade of brownish purple. And in late summer, this canna variety has orange-red flowers. But you really need to grow it for the foliage. And it's called Canna Intrigue, sun and organic soils. It grows to 7 feet tall, but only 2 feet wide. So it would make a great large container garden. It grows in zones 8 to 10, but if you're up north, you can treat it like an annual and dig it up for the wintertime. Let's go to John in Mulberry. Good morning, John. Thank you for calling.
Yes. My papaya trees are doing good. I had to prop them up because they have so many papayas on. I just hope we don't have a freeze. My little pecan tree is a foot tall, and it lost all its leaves, and I don't know if that's normal or not.
Well, they can be deciduous, but is it in the ground? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, it's in the ground. Foot tall. Is it in full sun?
Yes.
Okay. And how often are you watering it?
Not a lot, just maybe every other day.
Well, every other day is a lot, John. That's a lot.
Oh. But,
okay, so I'm kind of wondering what's going on. Have you fertilized it recently?
Yes, I fertilized it with 111.
Okay, and
10-10,
I mean. 10-10-10, okay. How long ago?
Probably 3 weeks ago.
Okay, did it lose its leaves after that?
They kind of turned brown.
Yeah.
And they fell off.
Yeah, okay, so that's telling me, yes, so that quickly. So you probably burned them with the fertilizer. And so, so always follow the label. And make sure that it's saturated, that you water it real well before you fertilize again. It should come back. Just keep an eye on it. Water it probably 2 to 3 times a week, hand water it, and then let me know how it does, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, John. We're going to be back. We have Derek Haynes, the chocolate botanist, coming on in the next hour. We'd like to thank Pam Knox with the University of Georgia and her information on weather. She's got a great blog on the case. I will be posting it in our podcast and on our Facebook page. Go to our Facebook page and like it, and let me know if you have any questions. I have wonderful information coming up for you on gardening and answering questions from the website. If it's Saturday morning. No, it's not Saturday morning.
It is Saturday. We got to get video cameras up in here because I'm like, I just freaked out for a millisecond because it's not time yet. We have 1 minute. But I would like to bring up Teresa's thing, okay? Teresa isn't big on cut flowers because basically you're giving somebody dead flowers, correct, Teresa?
Yes.
So I see on the TV screen that they're trying to tell you what's the best flowers to give somebody. Well, why don't you go and take some of those suggestions that Teresa just gave you on the chocolate plants and give them to your loved one?
Yeah, that would work. If they can find them, because usually, you know, you have to get these ahead of time.
Yep.
But Derek Haynes is going to be on, and he is going to tell us about the language of love with flowers. And he is going to be telling us what the flowers mean. And so I'm looking forward to that. He's a chocolate botanist from North Carolina.
Oh, I'm so
lots
hungry.
Of fun. Lots of fun. And we're going to be talking all sorts of gardening. You're going to want to call in with your gardening questions in the next hour. And now, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
800-240-4587. That's 800-240-4587. WF.